are the key differences between an intrapreneur and an entrepreneur?
You know, first of all, I think that the issue of the differences between the entrepreneur and manager are actually more interesting, and we talked about that earlier. Entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs are often the same person. The entrepreneur is often a frustrated entrepreneur who left the company to start something.
Yes.
So the chances are they have some similarities in personality. There is one essential aspect of the entrepreneur, which is not present in the necessarily present in entrepreneurs, which is some tolerance of authority. There are people who simply could never work in a large corporation. They would react badly to being told what to do. Entrepreneurs have to be able to handle a certain amount of that. And maybe entrepreneurs in general have a higher risk tolerance because they're maybe putting their house on the line, whereas the entrepreneur not so much. But I think that the differences are not great. I think it's more important, the similarities are much more interesting than the differences. So those are the two biggest differences that I know about between them. Whereas the differences between the entrepreneur and the typical manager are a whole different mindset that behaves very differently. Just finally, just to say, can entrepreneurship be taught? In addition to other things, you can teach people how to sell their idea inside an organization. Most entrepreneurs go about this in a very backwards way, over-representing their idea and not learning the basic selling technique if it's only a test. So nothing is going to happen if we do this. Let's just try it out. Or asking for advice before asking for resources and so forth. These are things that they need to know. Similarly, they need to know about how to reframe their idea so that it doesn't attack the organizational immune system's attention and so on. So they need to know how to manage team dynamics. Many of them did not have a course in team dynamics, and they need tools which they can use to check on that and so forth. So there's a whole bunch of things that you can teach entrepreneurs, which are, you know, they're really things that anybody could use. They're not necessarily specific to entrepreneurs, but they're very important for entrepreneurs to know, and they can learn those. They can't learn to have a heart. But they can discover that they have a heart, and they can discover that they like that part of themselves, and so that is can be brought about through efforts to bring about entrepreneurship in an organization. I just don't know whether to call it training or not.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to a talk that you gave maybe a year or so ago, and you were talking about creativity plus implementation equals innovation. And it sounds like what you're describing is part of what will allow that implementation to happen so you can get to the innovation.
Yeah, there are implementation skills. And their implementation attitudes.
Absolutely. Well, Gifford Pinchot, what a pleasure to talk to you today about characteristics, mindsets, and behaviors of entrepreneurs. That was great fun and really enlightening. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and it was a pleasure. I hope we stay in touch.
I hope so, too. And, you know, maybe I will be in touch because I think we're done with this formal part of the interview, but I do really want to thank you. That was really enjoyable, and I think that that'll be really high value for people to listen to. I was actually going to reach out to you for an interview. I don't know if, I think what I'll do is send you some information about me and this book and see if maybe I can leverage some of this content for the book if it makes sense for you. But let me first give you some background information so that you know where this might be going. But also not just wanting to be considerate of your time and not necessarily have an additional interview for really no reason. And then of course I'll speak to Hans as well if that seems like something that might be amenable to you.
Yeah, I would be happy to talk to you some more. And
wonderful.
And where are you located?
I'm in Minneapolis and you're in Seattle, correct?
I'm moving to Oakland.
Oh.
You catch me in a motel with a U-Haul truck parked outside, and I'm driving to Oakland.
Oh, you're literally moving to Oakland right now. I mean, you're in the process of moving to Oakland. That's fantastic. Yeah. How fun.
And we think that maybe, when we think about innovation in Seattle, there's a lot of interest in technology and new markets and those sorts of things. But we don't find the same level of interest in organizational systems as takes place in the Bay Area. You know, there people are less talking about holacracy and sociocracy and all these experiments which are taking place. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are, and I'll just go on for a moment if I
may. Please do.
So I want to describe an experiment that we did in the U.S. Forest Service, which was the course that Jenny Bradley was in. Mm-hmm. So we created something called enterprise teams, which really should be called intraprise teams, but never nonetheless. And this was taking internal services like Jenny Bradley. Jenny Bradley was in the recreational planning business. And instead of reporting hierarchically to a forest supervisor, which is the way the Forest Service is organized around 150 forests, and the forest supervisor sort of the basically where the action takes place in the Forest Service, they become a separate team, which now deals with anyone they want selling their services inside the Forest Service. They get no allocated budget whatsoever, but they can bill their customers. They can set their prices. They can decide what they're selling. The money which they bill their customers comes into an internal bank account where it remains until they spend it. It doesn't go away at the end of the year. So they can build up capital. They can use that capital for any business purpose that they wish. They can buy training. They can buy equipment. They can do whatever they want with it. And they build up their businesses. Typical examples, a team that builds trails and roads, a team that does biological assays. So for example, Above and Beyond, one of those teams got really tired of doing wildlife biology and plant biology to legitimize the clear cutting of forests. Mm-hmm. So they would go in and say, well, there's nobody, no endangered species here. Go ahead and do whatever you want. And they said, we're just not going to do that work anymore. Yeah. The only work we're interested in is restoration biology. You want to call us in to figure out how to restore a something. Well, they have a 2-year book of business now ahead of them. They're living the dream. And obviously much happier than they would be doing work that they didn't want to do.
Yeah. That's a great story.
This continuously gets hostily audited from the center because it's highly irregular. So the OMB will send in a group to turn it down. And they come back and they say, well, it is highly unusual, but we have two problems. One, their customers love them and say they couldn't get the work done without them. And two, they are 1.8 times as productive as the average Forest Service employee. Now, if the government were 1.8 times as productive, we wouldn't have a deficit. So this is strategic, right? This is not a little thing. And what we find is that by taking people out of a bureaucratic mindset and putting them into an entrepreneurial mindset, they can do their work better, whatever their work is. They end up not just responding to orders, but thinking strategically, well, what will be needed in recreation planning 2 years from now? Let's go train ourselves in these new skills. What's going on in the legislature? What's and how do we do this work more efficiently?
It makes me think about what you said about freedom before, mm-hmm. right? So it's autonomy, it's freedom. And when you have that kind of a freedom and you're not sort of inured to a process because you have to, it seems like you might be more inclined to think about better approaches, better solutions, yeah. and then more creative ways to execute on those.
Yeah. And from a systems point of view, there's several advantages here. One, if you look at the human brain at age 2, as opposed to birth, it has half the number of synapses that it had at birth. What's happening? It's pruning away the connections that don't work. But in a bureaucracy, you keep making connections. You never prune them away, right? Something goes wrong, you've got to check with that person before you do it. Something else goes wrong, you've got to check with that person before you do it. And pretty soon, you get this kind of gridlock of connection. Now, a neural network computer basically has all the connections in place, and then as it analyzes the data, which it's supposed to get smart about, it prunes away those connections which are not useful in making predictions and ends up being pretty smart about it. And organizations need to do the same thing. In this system, nobody has to use their services, and they don't have to deal with anyone they don't want to deal with. If somebody's an asshole, boom, never going to work for them again, right? You don't have to fill out any paperwork. You don't have to go through human resources. You just don't do it. Yeah. And so the disconnection process is quite strong. And the result of that is a lot of feedback in the system. And all the things that we know about the way markets work, working in your favor. So what I'm saying is that there's room in entrepreneuring to go to the level where the ordinary people are living entrepreneurial lives. Yeah. Maybe they're just a team member in a group of 20, but they're still much, much closer to the entrepreneurial spirit. They actually have a voice in what, you know, when you're part of a group of 20, you still have a voice.
Yeah.
When you're part of a group of 100, you don't necessarily have a voice anymore. That to me is illustrating that, that was a program, right? It took us 9 months of meeting with 14 people, including the union, HR, legal, everybody had to have their hand in that.
That's right.
To establish the rules. And then we said, these are the rules. These are the principles that we're operating on. We all signed in blood that we would defend them. And we had a steering committee whose job was to defend them. And when they disbanded the steering committee, then things began going downhill. And it lasted for, you know, a couple of decades. And it's... still going in name, but I don't honor it anymore.
Fantastic. I just occurs to me, I do have one last question for you, which may not be a fair one to throw in right at the end here, but I also realize you'll be in Toronto, won't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So I'll see you there. That'll be nice to meet you in person.
Good.
Okay, I've just got to ask this question. Maybe you can let me know if you want to save it for Toronto or answer it now, but do you believe that disruptive innovation, or let's even say breakthrough innovation, can be driven through entrepreneurship? Or do you think it's really more incremental innovations that you've seen in your own practice emerge from entrepreneurial practices or approaches?
Sure. Absolutely disruptive innovation can be driven. In fact, it's the only way it can be driven. You know, I like to say that the way I got entrepreneurial stories for any book is I just find an innovation I like and then trace it back to the entrepreneurs, and I always find them.
Now, what about the corporate immune system, though? Are you saying that it's the entrepreneurs who know how to avoid those? Because, you know, the current approaches look at the immune system, then having kind of a black ops team. So you have teams operating on the edges, and then you've got teams that are really ostensibly like they're outside of the organization altogether to avoid this sort of corporate immune response.
The most innovative companies don't centralize innovation. They make innovation be something that everybody has the opportunity to do. And, it's okay to have some places like, the Skunk Works at Lockheed or whatever. And obviously, those were very entrepreneurial people who were making that that go. And obviously, they were doing breakthrough innovation. But, I just think of some of the teams that we've seen, plastics conductive enough to make boxes that replace metal boxes in terms of EMFs. So they basically creating a plastic Faraday cage around around electronics. If you're a plastic company, that's a breakthrough. It's classic disruptive. Here's all these people bending sheet metal, and you come in with something completely different, which is lower cost, and it's not as good as sheet metal as a Faraday cage, but it's good enough.
And
that is the exact.
That's disruptive innovation. It's true, and this was driven by entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I see it all the time and disruptive innovation often doesn't look that important to start with. Just as when we look at entrepreneurial companies that succeeded big, they had no clue when they started as to where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Richard Branson, but let's take Odwalla, the juice company that Coke mm-hmm. bought.
Mm-hmm.
They were a band of musicians who were not making quite enough money playing out. They decided to make a little juice and sell it to their local health food stores to sort of piece together enough to live on so they could go on playing the saxophone. I mean...
True.
Ben and Jerry's, come on, what a bunch of clowns.
They were operating a little bit on their own, right? So the example of the plastic, replacing sheet metal with plastic, if you're on the inside of a big firm, then you'll face probably more scrutiny, more pushback, more like, that's not how we do it.
And that's why you need a good sponsor, or actually several sponsors. And that relationship is also both intuitive and analytic. So the sponsors have a lot of the same characteristics as entrepreneurs, in addition to having power, and influence. But they are often former entrepreneurs. I mean, the classic sponsor is 50 years old. They have realized that they are never going to be CEO of the company. The game of rising in the hierarchy is basically over. So what are they going to do with their time? What's the game worth playing now? And, they were an innovative early on in their career. What if they make space for other innovators? That would be a fun game to play. And those people are very hard to shut down because they probably have enough reputation so that they're really hard to fire.
Right.
And I'm thinking of Chuck House, who was head of engineering at Hewlett Packard, and he had his fingers in over 17% of the innovations that Hewlett Packard launched during his tenure. He was a phenomenal entrepreneur who eventually got promoted, but then he was making space for other people because he loved what they were doing, and it's a very you know, how do you choose an entrepreneur? Some of it is we have checklists. So let's check for these things if you want to see if somebody is an entrepreneur or not.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it is a personal relationship where you trust that person because you've stayed with them long enough to know who they really are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you care about them.
Yeah.
As well as their idea, right?
There's a lot about relationships and trust, I agree, in entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. And that is ignored by a lot of programs which are trying to intellectualize the selection criteria.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. Fantastic. Well, this has been fantastic. Really great, Gifford. Thank you again, and I really look forward to meeting you in Toronto.
Yeah.
I wish you your safe travels en route to Oakland.
Thank you. Yeah, we need that because the truck is wide.
Are you driving yourself?
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay.
And so, you know, the lanes which are really wide when you're in a car, not so wide.
Not so wide when you're in big. Yeah.
You go around a corner. You might, your rear wheel might catch the curb as you there's a whole bunch of new driving skills to be acquired here.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
You really have to pay attention.
Yeah.
But that's all good for that's good practice.
Absolutely. Travel safe. Right. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Again. Take care. Bye.
Bye.